What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the program. It is not your average Boston Sports Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Hayden. This is episode 404. Got a great episode for you folks today. Got a lot to get to. I've got some Celtics and Knicks talk before the semifinal series gets going tonight. I got some Red Sox as well. Be getting into some Revolution as well. Some Bruins thoughts as well as the draft lotteries this evening. So we'll get into that as well. And we'll also take a look at some playoff notes from around the NBA and the NHL. There were a couple of game sevens last night, so we'll get to both of those. I would like to remind you folks that you can listen to last week's draft class deep dive that I did on the Patriots. So if you've not listen to that, you can go take a look or take a listen. It was good to be able to go through all the Patriots draft picks, take a look at, the different players and how they might fit into the roster. And then we also took a look at some of the undrafted free agents as well, in terms of players that I think are likely to, compete for a roster spot. So you can go take a listen to that. So, probably won't be any Patriots talk today. We've got plenty of other things to get to. So, I think we're going to start with the Celtics. And obviously, as we are recording this Monday after last week, the Celtics had, taken a 3-1 series lead against the Magic. They were able to close out the series in five, and have been off for a week, basically. So, series ended in five on, or almost a week. Series ended in five last Tuesday. So we are now, the day of game one between Celtics Knicks. Knicks closed out the Pistons in game six. Pretty entertaining game six. If you're able to watch the end of that game, Jalen Brunson was unbelievable, made some big shots for the Knicks. And so obviously he's going to kind of be the focal point, I think, of this series for the Celtics defensively, in terms of, the guy and on the Knicks that I think the Celtics are going to try to do the best they can to kind of slow down, because he's kind of their heartbeat, makes everything go. So I think defensively the Celtics were able to kind of hold him in check for the majority of those regular season matchups that they played. I think obviously it's a well-known, it's well-known watching the games earlier this regular season that the Celtics really just were, really outclassed the Knicks, really up until that final game of the regular season meetings. It was kind of at that point, it was kind of decided that both teams, you kind of knew where they were going to slot in terms of the postseason. So it's like kind of hard to take a lot out of that game. And I would even argue that it's hard to take a lot out of the regular season matchups, just because things are different. It's just regular season. The way those games go is a little bit different. They're scheduled in between different parts of your regular season schedule. So, it's kind of like the context of those games are much different than the context of a playoff series, where it's like, okay, it's just one opponent that you're focusing on for, four, five, six, seven games. So it's like much different than the regular season matchups, where you are focusing on the season as a whole. So it's like a little bit different. So I think, not to say that, oh, this means the Knicks are going to beat the Celtics in this series, which I don't anticipate to happen. But I think it just means that the Celtics, did obviously play great against the Knicks this regular season, but it doesn't necessarily mean that, all the games are going to be the same. We would like to think so, and I do think that this is a matchup for the Celtics that is a little bit easier, because I think the Knicks do not have that kind of size and physicality that the Magic do. And I think that, that particular matchup kind of, not that it gave the Celtics problems, because they won the series in five, but it's like they were an opponent that I think matched them up well, because they were able to be physical and kind of force them to, play outside of their comfort zone in terms of, limiting the 3-point shots and forcing the Celtics to, attack the basket over and over and over, which I think is why the Celtics had so many, free throw attempts in that series. And I think the Celtics obviously still need to attack and do the best that they can, but I do think that this series you're going to see more, normal 3-point attempts, that this isn't going to be a series where, they're struggling to get those shots. I know the Knicks are going to try to do the best that they can, but I just don't think that they have the personnel to be able to slow down the Celtics defensively. I know the idea in the offseason was to get Bridges to match up better with Tatum and Brown, but it's just, I don't think that he's like a physical enough defender. Ananobi is there as well to do the same thing. He, I think, is a little bit of a better defender, but it's just, outside of that, the Knicks also don't really have a deep bench. Thibodeau plays the starters a lot. They pretty much are playing close to 35 minutes a night. So it's like when you're bringing guys off the bench, like, McBride and Robinson, like those are the guys that are probably going to play the majority of the minutes off the bench. And I don't really think that there's, anybody else with that, anybody else, on that roster that's going to play, major minutes off the bench. It really is just Robinson and McBride. You have Hart who starts, obviously. Cameron Payne is going to come off the bench, Landry Shamet, but it's like outside of that, you're really not going to see much in terms of depth off the bench, which I think is kind of where the Celtics definitely have an advantage over the Knicks in terms of the guys that they can turn to off the bench. It's not just Horford and Hauser. You also have Pritchard. You also have Cornette. The Celtics go 9 deep, and I just think the Knicks probably don't go more than 7 deep, to be perfectly honest. So I think the Celtics have an advantage there, and I think the Celtics just have the ability to kind of hunt those mismatches that the Knicks defense has, that the Celtics should be able to kind of get what they want offensively. The only kind of concern I do have is the Celtics being careless with the ball. The Knicks are not a physical defense, not necessarily. They're going to try to, but I think that the way that they're going to try to, make this series interesting is by being active with their hands and trying to force the Celtics into mistakes. And I think when you see the Celtics lose playoff games, it's usually because they have a lot of high turnovers or a high number of turnovers. And I think that that's going to be what the Knicks are going to try to do to win this series. Obviously, they're going to try to be physical. They're going to try to limit the 3-point shooting, but it's just, I don't know how much they're really going to be able to do that. But I think where they're going to try to take advantage is, with active hands, with transition play, and things like that. And so I think I have confidence that this Celtics team should be fine in this series. I really don't think that there's any way that the Knicks can win this series, short of a catastrophic injury. But it's like, again, I don't think that they have the defensive personnel to kind of keep up. I will say, though, that this is a much better offensive team than the Magic. This is a team that has two guys on their roster that can pretty much get what they want on a nightly basis offensively with Brunson and Towns. And so I think the Celtics have to be able to be on their A game defensively, because Brunson's a guy that when he gets hot and is playing the best way he can, he's one of the best scorers in the league. And I think Towns, once he kind of gets his shot going from deep especially, he can be really, really effective. So I think for the Celtics, it's just staying connected, and not getting frustrated by the foul baiting that Brunson is going to try to do. It's just, he's one of those guys, if you have watched the Celtics for years, he kind of reminds you a little bit of Trae Young, kind of the way that he hunts for fouls. And it's like, yeah, it's going to be really frustrating to have to deal with that. And I think the Celtics just are going to need to keep their composure defensively, but also it's just, yeah, they're probably going to be some times in this series where the Celtics aren't getting a great whistle, or Brunson is foul baiting and is able to kind of get to the free throw line with ease. And so it's just they're going to have to work through those things. But I think, again, the Knicks are not a matchup that really concerns me. I think that they're not as deep. And I think that the Celtics can take advantage of, them defensively fairly easily. But I don't want this to come off as like, oh, this is going to be an easy series. I don't think it will. I think the Knicks get a game, maybe two, in this series. And I think the Celtics may need to work a little bit harder to, win this series. I still think that they do. I'm going to say six. I think it's going to be a little bit more challenging than we think, but I think that they get the job done. I think that, it's great to see that Jrue Holiday is going to be healthy for this series. Injury report came out yesterday. There's nobody on that list, so good to see that Holiday will be back after missing the last three games of the series against the Magic with the hamstring strain. I do think, him being healthy is huge because that's another great defender that you can put on Brunson. That's the kind of thing that I'm interested to see with the Celtics defensively. Them putting different guys on Brunson, whether it's, the Jays, whether it's Holiday, Derek White, Peyton Pritchard, even the way that, he can play defense and play really aggressively. So I do think the Celtics will throw a lot of different matchups at Brunson. I'm curious to see the matchup between Towns and Porzingis, both guys that I think are really good on the interior, but also can knock down shots. I think Porzingis, had a little bit trouble, a little bit of trouble, kind of getting untracked in that Magic series. Obviously had the elbow to the face, which I think may have affected him a little bit more than we think. But I think, I'd look for him to kind of have a good bounce back series. Obviously he used to play for the Knicks, so that might kind of add some fuel. But I think ultimately, this is a series that the Celtics just are going to be better offensively and just have more depth. And I think that that's what you're going to see that, ends up being the difference. It's a hot take. I think the Knicks get two games. Not going to be surprised if the Knicks get one of these first two at the Garden, but pretty confident in the Celtics' ability to, be able to bounce back from losses, play through adversity. It's just what they've been doing for years. So I think the Celtics do win the series. I do think that you're going to see a big Derek White series. I think that he's going to come up with some big plays. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a number of close games in this series, kind of, down to the wire, last possession. And, Derek's always coming up with the big plays and clutch moments. So it'll be a great series to watch. Boston, New York. What more could you ask for? The series will start tonight at the Garden, 7 o'clock start, and then game two is Wednesday night, also at 7 at the Garden. And then game three series will shift to New York Saturday. Will be game three, 3:30 start at MSG. And then game four will be next Monday at 7:30. So I think that probably is going to do it. I do know that there were some rumblings last week in terms of the Celtics maybe being a team that might be looking to make a trade in the offseason, although I couldn't really tell if it was like adding to the team or something for salary cap reasons, which for the record, I'm not going to be surprised if there's a move that the Celtics make this summer that might be a bit surprising, but it might be to get under that second apron. So it might be kind of for a salary reason that the Celtics make kind of a rather large trade. So I think that's going to do it for the Celtics. Obviously, game one tonight against the Knicks, 7 o'clock start once again. So we're going to get to the Red Sox next, and it definitely is a frustrating time for the Red Sox. frustrating time to be a Red Sox fan. It was kind of a pretty tough weekend for the Red Sox. Had some rain. Tristan Casas goes down with an injury. Now he's out for the season. And a couple of games where the Red Sox bullpen just could not hold the leads. So I think just an all-around pretty tough weekend for the Red Sox as they had come home after the series against the Blue Jays, in which they had lost a couple games in that series thanks to the bullpen as well. So it's kind of becoming a theme for this baseball team that's now at 500, 18 and 18, and I think are 4-9 in one-run games. So it's just the bullpen, kind of the issue that I had highlighted before the season, that this might be the one area that lets them down, and it's been letting them down. You know, Whitlock has had some issues, Slayton has had some issues too, and the Red Sox have kind of been unable to get games to the close to the closer, you know, whether it's Chapman or whoever it is. But it's like, it's the one spot that I think is starting to rear its ugly head, and it's, you know, starting to, infect the team and not allowing them to kind of close games out. And I think it's kind of putting good pitching performances to waste. You know, Kershaw, I don't think had his best stuff necessarily yesterday, but it's like it should be good enough to win. You know, how it gave you a good start last week that they couldn't hold on to. And it's just, they're not going to get very far this season if there's no confidence in that bullpen to hold leads. The Red Sox are lucky that the Yankees are not running away with the division and they're only two games out of first. But it's like something's going to need to change. There might need to be like a big shakeup in that bullpen because they can't keep losing these one-run games, losing these games that they should be able to, you know, close out. So it's just, that's been the hard part of this weekend. And then, you know, with the news about Casas, just, it's terrible because you feel for the guy who only played 63 games last season with a major injury, and now he suffers, you know, pretty serious knee injury that, you know, it's, I don't know about his like recovery and him coming back and kind of being that same player. You know, obviously the surgery was successful and he'll be out for the rest of the season. But I think it's just, there's something about that injury that just, I don't know, it worries me a little bit in terms of kind of his long-term prospects with this team. And, you know, I think given his struggles this season, I think was already kind of a topic of discussion for a lot of Red Sox fans in terms of, is he a guy that sticks around? I think just based on, you know, kind of trade rumors and things like that. So it just has not been a fun 2 years for him, unfortunately, I think with the injuries and, you know, rumors and that sort of thing. So it just really stunk to see him go down because I think obviously he'd been off to the bad start, but you would hope that, you know, he was maybe going to turn it around at some point. So just a really tough blow to this Red Sox team that I think you were hoping, you know, how many times in the offseason did we talk about, you know, him and Trevor Story being healthy and being a big part of their offense, and, you know, him going down just doesn't make things easier. And it just is also another thing that kind of bothers me is the injury to Casas highlights the Red Sox kind of not having much of a backup plan at first base. You know, credit to Romy Gonzalez, he's a solid utility player, but it's just they need to have somebody else playing first base that has like actual major league experience playing there. You know, yeah, he's a utility guy, he's played there before, I get it. You know, Wong has played a little first base. They bring in Abraham Toro from Worcester, but he's only played 15 games at that position. So I don't know, it just, and maybe there's a simpler way to look at it, but it just seems wild to me that this team doesn't have another guy on the roster that's like an experienced first baseman. You know, it's literally just Casas, and it's like you would think that they would have built the depth a little bit better. You know, it's like guys can play first base, that's fine, but it just seems like it would make more sense if they had, you know, somebody else that is on that roster that like can play the corner infield spots, but play them like consistently. And it's not, I don't want to, you know, rail on Romy Gonzalez, but it's like surely there have to be better options than kind of a utility guy who plays all over the infield. And it's like now, you know, Casas is out for the season. So it's like, you know what, 36 games into the season, you have 126 more games to play. Are you really going to play him there? Gonzalez there for 126 games. So I just hope that, you know, there becomes a backup plan. Just doesn't seem like they really had much of a plan, that the thought was, you know, oh, Casas, he'll be fine. He, you know, only played 63 games last year, but, you know, he won't get hurt again. It's just, and maybe that's too simple of a thing to say, but it just seems like they could have done a better job with the depth at that spot. So it just felt like the hits kept coming for the Red Sox with, you know, Walker Buehler being put on the 15-day injured list after having some issues after his last start. So it just seemed like, you know, everything that could go wrong was going wrong. You had some rain this weekend, you know, interfering with some games, and, you know, I got an off day today before they play a three-game series against the Rangers. But this is a team that I think is struggling for confidence right now because it just doesn't seem like much is going right. You know, you have the bullpen wasting leads. You have the offense still having a lot of trouble hitting with guys on base. That's kind of been the big theme this season offensively, that the Red Sox are just incapable of, you know, driving guys in, you know, in scoring position. You know, they lost four of their last five after winning, you know, three in a row, winning that series in Cleveland, winning that first game in Toronto. But it just seems like the bullpen is just kind of imploding in the last couple of games, and the Red Sox are in a spot where they kind of need some games and some wins to feel good about themselves. And it just seems like they've not really been able to get on track in this season. You know, it's they win three out of four, they lose three out of four. They win, you know, three in a row, then they lose three in a row. And it just seems like there's not been any consistency in really any area of this team. I mean, I think offensively, they've had their moments for sure. And I think pitching wise, the starting pitching has started to be a little bit better. But it's just like when you don't have confidence in your bullpen to hold leads, it's kind of hard to, you know, feel good about the team. And, you know, you're looking at an offense that, you know, Duran has started to pick it up. You know, Bregman has been unbelievable in the last couple of weeks. You know, leads the team in home runs, RBIs, batting average, and hits. And he's kind of been, you know, exactly what the offense needed, but it almost doesn't really matter when, you know, the bullpen is wasting these really good starts by the rotation. You know, I think that offensively, you've seen Campbell come back after he had missed a couple of games, so it's good to see him back. But, you know, I wonder about what's going to go on with, you know, losing Casas, because, yeah, as much as he was struggling hitting 182, you still figure that at some point he was going to, you know, kind of pick it up and, you know, add a power bat to that lineup. And now it's like they really have to figure out a way to replace that level of production. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, I think, I don't want to say this in a negative way, but I think unfortunately, first base is not really a spot that the Red Sox have a lot of depth in the minors, you know, room to like bring up a Roman Anthony or a Marcelo Meyer. They don't really play first base. So it's kind of like you would have thought that maybe potentially an injury could have changed something for, bringing up one of those two guys. But, Casas being a first baseman doesn't really affect either one of them. And I don't think the Red Sox are, looking for either of those guys to play first base regularly. But, it'll be interesting to see, what the solution is at first base, because clearly they're going to have to come up with one. I don't know if it means moving Devers. I don't know if it means, trading for somebody. It just seems like they're going to have to do something. But I think it'll be interesting to watch if, there is like a roster spot that they need to open up. Do you see Anthony at some point? Because I think clearly you're going to need help in terms of, replacing that level of production that, Casas would probably, you would assume to give you, in terms of what he can do, in terms of, a guy that can hit 20 to 25 home runs, driving close to 100 RBIs. So it's like, you're going to need to kind of replace that sort of level of production. So that will be interesting to see. I know we've touched on Yoshida returning to the team at some point, returning to the roster after coming, coming back from from the injuries. I'm not sure if that's going to happen anytime soon, but that's definitely another thing to think about, in terms of, trying to replace some of the offense that you lose with Casas going down. I think, looking starting pitching wise, I think Crochet has been pretty much everything that you would expect him to be. I do think, despite Tanner Houck having those issues with some games this season, he still submitted a couple of quality starts. Bueller, I think, has pitched well as well. Tough to see him on the injured list. I do think Brian Bayo has come in and has been really, really good since returning from injury. He's made three starts, a 2.55 ERA, a couple of quality starts and a couple wins. So at least there's some good news there in terms of the health of the rotation. Giolito, obviously, that was kind of the thing that really frustrated me last week, that it seemed like, he came back, gave you a really good outing in his first start in the bullpen, couldn't hold the lead. I know he gave up some runs, but it's just like, it's like the Red Sox keep looking for, things to be positive about, but then it's just like the bullpen can't hold the lead, and then you kind of just get the bad news that just piles on top of itself, and that's kind of what it felt like when Casas went down. It was like, this team doesn't seem like they can catch a break at this point. So it's just getting to a point where it's frustrating because, as we said, off the start, or when the season started, that they have expectations now. This is no longer a, oh, this is just a mishmash of roster guys that aren't expected to do anything. It's like, no, you're expected to compete in the AL East. You're expected to compete and be a playoff team. Now, I think that outside of the division leaders in the American League, nobody's really separating themselves, which I think is good for the Red Sox, but it's just, you can't keep playing 500 baseball, deep into late May and June. Like, they're going to need to start, getting on track, and starting to win some more series and win games regularly, because it just, if you're playing with expectations, okay, then the team needs to start being treated that way in terms of, like, okay, if you have expectations now, you have every right to be like, okay, why aren't they performing better? So, it's just, it's kind of the way things go in this town, where it's like, you have those expectations, well, then people are going to start treating you like you have those, to be like, okay, not going to kind of give you the grace of like, oh, well, they're a team that's still figuring it out. It's like, no, like, you went out and you got Crochet, you went out and you got Bregman with the expectation that, okay, you're going to compete and, be a playoff team. And through 36 games, I don't think you've seen much of a team that you expected to see. So it's just, it just needs to be better. They need to be better, I think, in all aspects, the defense, the batting, the failures with runners in scoring position, and now the issues with the bullpen. So, they really just need to figure it out at this point, because I think the season's going to start to get away from them if they don't figure it out. And that's at least the thing that's somewhat okay, that they're only 36 games in, that there's a lot more season to go, but it's like they're going to need to start figuring it out soon. So, off day, as we said today, Red Sox will begin a 3-game set with the Texas Rangers tomorrow evening. Lucas Giolito is scheduled to pitch his Fenway debut tomorrow night at 6:45. And then the Red Sox this weekend are in Kansas City. So they will take a road trip to play the Royals, and then they will have a 3-game series against the Tigers early next week. So I think that's probably going to do it for the Red Sox. We're going to move on. We're going to talk a little bit about the Revolution. So they are the team worth talking about, I would say, as they won their fourth straight game over the weekend, beating Toronto FC, and have moved into the ninth and final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. I know that that seems crazy and seems early that we're talking about playoff spots, but the Revolution getting back into that position thanks to their fourth straight win, in which they keep the shutout streak going, which has gone through the last four games. And I think it's the fourth longest shutout streak in franchise history. So the Revs beating Toronto 2-0 on the road on Saturday. So good stuff there for the Revs offensively. Carlos Hill, Leo Campana scoring both goals, or scoring the goals. And defensively, things continue to look really good for the Revs, which is great news. That was kind of the area that you were kind of interested to see how they were going to improve with all the new guys, and all kind of the new guys in the back line. Ivicic obviously had been with the team last season, but I think defensively they're playing great, limiting a lot of chances. Ivicic has been playing well, and I think offensively, as much as they've had their issues scoring goals this season, great to see Campana get his second goal of the year. Great to see Carlos Hill get another goal. And it's like finally you're starting to see the team, score some timely goals, which obviously when you've been offensively challenged, finding the timely spaces to score goals is huge. I thought that the second goal, especially Campana's goal, was a great setup by Alhassan Youssef with a great pass, setting up Campana for his second goal of the season. Carlos Hill scoring on a volley in the first, or for the first goal. So it just seems that the vibes are just really positive with his Revolution team right now, that the defense is working the way it's supposed to, and offensively, they're getting the goal scoring when they need it. So it is just interesting that with Caleb Porter, with the different guys that they have now, playing a little bit more of a defensive kind of game that I think with Bruce Arena, you're used to seeing a team that would be, high octane, getting a lot of chances, scoring a lot of goals. And, this team is kind of the exact opposite, that they are, comfortable in their structure defensively, taking chances and scoring goals. But it's not like the similar type of offense that they had under Bruce Arena. So it's just great to see that the vision is working. That was kind of one of the things that was frustrating last year, where it seemed like you couldn't see the vision exactly because maybe didn't have the right personnel. And now, with this full offseason, Caleb Porter's been able to kind of build the team how he would like, and building the team kind of how he built the championship teams that he built in Columbus and Portland. So, not trying to say that, oh, this is going to be a championship team or anything, but it just is good to see that they are on the right track and they're seeing results. Because obviously, like, that's the biggest thing where it's like you can say all you want, in terms of trusting your process and doing all the little things, but it's like unless you're getting production, seeing wins, it kind of rings hollow. So it's just good that that's not happening, that they're able to back up, the kinds of positive things that they're talking about. So Revs in ninth place in the East, 1 point in that final playoff spot, but obviously 10 games into the season, there still is a long ways to go. But great to see the Revs have, climbed out of the basement in the East and continue to kind of, or want to continue to keep things going. So the Revolution will play the US Open Cup, the competition on Wednesday. They will play Rhode Island FC. That is Wednesday night. And then the Revolution will get back into MLS action Saturday at 7:30 against Orlando City, as they will be on the road for yet another game. Orlando City, eighth place in the Eastern Conference. So Revs could jump a couple more teams in the Eastern Conference if they're able to win on Saturday. So obviously the US Open Cup does not count against the MLS standings, but obviously they'll be back in MLS competition Saturday at 7:30. So I think that's going to do it for the Revolution. We're going to get to talking a little bit of Bruins, just a couple items that I wanted to get to. Obviously, the coaching search and coaching news. Mike Sullivan hired by the Rangers last week, so obviously he will not be coaching the Bruins. Still kind of curious to see kind of what the Bruins are going to look for in that new coach. Just hoping it's somebody that they can, have confidence in to stick around, because it just seems like the revolving door of coaches in the last couple of years is just, I don't think has exactly helped the team. So it just would be great to see them find somebody that, they can feel good about, and the ownership and the ownership and management, can feel confident in, that they're not, letting somebody go after 2 years because they're not where they need to be. So it just will be interesting to see what decision they do make. I do think it is worth noting, though, that David Pastrnak is a fan of Joe Sacco, and I think that might be why he's still, kind of in the conversation to be the head coach. I don't think he ultimately gets hired, but I do think that that is kind of an element that I am interested to see. Whoever that new coach is, what's their relationship going to be like with Pastrnak, with McAvoy, with Swayman, with kind of your stars, so to speak, that I think you want to have a coach that can coach those guys well and also be good for younger players, have kind of a good structure, but is also a coach that personally I'd like to see, a coach that emphasizes them taking more chances offensively and being a little bit more of kind of an offensive mind. So that'll be interesting to see. Bruins will have the draft lottery tonight, see what pick they get in the NHL entry draft. They can end up with the first pick, the second pick, the fifth pick, sixth pick, or seventh pick. So we'll see what ends up happening. Obviously, it's a lottery, so kind of a toss-up to see where they end up. But, fingers crossed things go well. I do think that it is fascinating that this is kind of the first year that they've had such a high draft pick, really since they took Tyler Seguin in 2010. I don't know if whoever they bring in with whatever pick they get is going to make that kind of impact. Obviously, when Seguin came in, the Bruins were, in the midst of competing for a Stanley Cup. Obviously, the circumstances are different. And obviously, they got that Seguin pick thanks to the Phil Kessel trade. So it's like, it's a different context now that, the Bruins have a high pick because they weren't very good as compared to 2010, when it's like, oh no, they were competing as being, a Stanley Cup contender, and we're able to get that high pick. So I'd be interested to see what ends up happening. I think be curious to see if whoever they pick is able to, make an impact right away. I guess I'd be surprised, unless they get that number one pick, because typically guys like that are able to, compete right away. But I do think kind of improving that talent pool in terms of your prospects is going to be a good thing that they can do really no matter what pick that they end up getting, even if it is number seven, that they can still get a high level, young player that they can, get behind in terms of being like, okay, we can continue to kind of build our pro team and then be ready for whenever that player is ready to contribute to the Bruins. So I think that's the other Bruins bit that I wanted to get to, other than the coaching stuff. But I do think, again, as we've mentioned several times, it's going to be a pretty interesting offseason where I think there's a possibility that you could see a lot of stuff going on. But, most importantly, the Bruins do need to do the best that they can to put the best team on the ice. I think just knowing how frustrating last season was, be great to, see them make some moves and the offseason that kind of get them back to where we expect them to be. I'm not expecting that we're going to see, a full one season turnaround where they're going to be, contenders again. But I do think this is going to be an incredibly, incredibly critical offseason for, a number of reasons. So think that's going to do it for the Bruins. Going to get into some other sports notes. Taking a look at the NBA, the Pacers beating the Cavaliers last night in game one of their first rounds or game one of their second round series. So home court taken away for the Cavs. So it's like pretty serious performance by the Pacers last night. I really thought that they were outstanding offensively. So definitely interesting plot point in that series. So game two of that series will take place. On game two, that series will take place tomorrow at 7, with the Pacers leading 1-0. Game seven in the Rockets Warriors series was last night. Warriors winning 103-89. They advanced to the second round to play the Timberwolves. Game one of that series will be tomorrow night, and then the Thunder and the Nuggets. The other Western Conference series kicks off tonight at 9:30. After the Celtics Knicks, the Jazz come to terms with head coach Will Hardy on a new contract extension through the year 2031. As you mentioned, the Celtics will be fully healthy for the Knicks series. Jrue Holiday on track to play game one versus the Knicks. It was announced over the weekend that Greg Popovich is done coaching for the Spurs. Kind of just, I think, sad news to see that he will no longer be coaching, but he will remain with the Spurs organization. Will, I think, work with the front office. So, just a nice note that if you had watched the, I think it was the TNT pregame before the, I think it was before Saturday's game between the Nuggets and the Clippers, they had some nice things to say about Coach Popovich, who's just, been the Spurs organization for years, winning the five NBA titles, coach of the year three times, and, coaching some of the greatest players that the league's ever seen. So nice to see that he will stay involved in the Spurs organization moving forward. So I think going to get to some NHL notes, take a look at some Stanley Cup playoff notes. The Jets with a tremendous comeback win last night in Game 7 over the Blues with two goals in the final 2 minutes. The tying goal with less than 2 seconds left. They force overtime, score the game winner in double overtime. So that was one of the craziest finishes that I've ever seen in a recent Stanley Cup playoff game. So the Jets advance. They will play the Stars in the second round. And the Stars are expected to get a couple players back for that series. Jason Robertson and Miro Heiskanen will return for them this series. So they had been injured in the first round, or had missed the first round series. I think taking a look at the second round that begins tonight in the Eastern Conference, if the Maple Leafs and the Panthers game one from Toronto will be tonight at 8. The other Eastern Conference series, Capitals and Hurricanes, game one from DC will be tomorrow night. And then the Jets and the Stars, as we mentioned, game one of that series will not start until Wednesday. And then Golden Knights and Oilers, the other West series, will begin tomorrow night at 9:30. So I think that's going to do it for the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll take a look at the standings here in Major League Baseball. As we mentioned, the Red Sox still just 2 games out of first, which I think is kind of the saving grace at this point, despite the issues that they've had, that they're still just 2 games out of first in the American League Central. Tigers lead the division at 22 and 13, a game and a half ahead of the Guardians. The Mariners, 20 and 13, first place in West, 2 games ahead of the Athletics. In the National League, the Mets still lead the East at 22 and 13, 2.5 games over the Phillies. The Cubs lead the Central, 3 games over the Reds. And then the Dodgers in first place in the West, half game lead over the Padres. The Dodgers now have the best record in baseball, just ahead of the Mets and the Tigers. So I think, take a look at some NFL notes before we get to the top five. Washington, D.C. will host the 2027 NFL draft. I think next year's draft is in Pittsburgh. And the Bills are signing Elijah Moore on a 1-year deal. So I think it's probably going to do it for the sports. We're going to get to our top five this week. There are a bunch of options that I could go with today on May 5th, 2025, but decided that this would be the best thing to do. So yesterday was Star Wars Day, May the 4th. So I figured it would be a good top five to rank my top five favorite Star Wars movies. Now, I know I listed one of the Star Wars movies when we did my top five movies. Now, that was top five, favorite movies, best movies. I think you could debate about what it was, but I think for this week, I'm going to do my favorite movies, and not necessarily the best movies, just the ones that I think I like the most. So might be a little bit controversial, but let's get into it. Actually, this first choice is probably going to be highly controversial. But number five for me, or starting off with number five, is Episode One, The Phantom Menace. Now, I know that there are a lot of issues that people have with this movie, Trade Federation and all that kind of BS, but you have to admit that the lightsaber battles in this movie are some of the best in the entire series. So that's kind of why it needs to be in the top five. You also have the pod racing as well, which I think is really, really cool. So I think those two elements for me have it in the top five. I also just have an affinity to it because that movie came out in 1999. I was born in 1995, so I kind of grew up with the prequels. So I think that movie in particular is partial to me. I also think that the origin of Darth Maul is kind of interesting too. So I think that that's a good solid movie. Some people might have a problem with it, but hey, that's why we do these top fives. Number four, I'm gonna go with Force Awakens, Episode Seven. I think just the hype around this film when it came out was, unmatched. 2015, hadn't been a Star Wars movie in, close to 30 years. So it was like the hype was crazy. The trailers were crazy, where it was like, oh my gosh, what's going on? So I have to say that like the hype definitely made this movie, very exciting. It was a good movie. It's not just the hype. I think it like really did a great job of kind of giving you a blueprint to the new trilogy. I know they didn't exactly do the best job with the next two movies, but I do think that that was on its own a really solid movie, that it paid respects to the old movies, but also kind of charted its own path. It's kind of unfortunate that 8 and 9 didn't really go in that direction, that kind of there were, there was kind of a difference in direction, in my opinion, but I still think Force Awakens was a really good movie. Number three, I have Rogue One, which is not one of the nine films, but it's one of the movies that take place in between the third and fourth episode. I thought that it's a really good, just on its own, a really good story. It does kind of link up episode three and episode four a little bit. I think that it's just a really good movie, and I think, lines up nicely into episode four. Number two, might get a little controversial here, but number two, I have Empire Strikes Back. But I do still think it's the best Star Wars movie. It's not my absolute favorite, though, so I had to put it here at number two. But I just think great storyline, great characters, really just great moments in this movie, too. Kind of the most iconic moments, or some of the most iconic moments in the entire series, I think just make it a really, really good movie. So here's where we get controversial again. My number one favorite Star Wars movie is Return of the Jedi. Now, this is a movie that for some reason I watched just over and over when I was a kid, and it just has always been my favorite movie. I don't know if it's the Ewoks. I don't know if it's just the way that it kind of has a finality in terms of like wrapping up the series. I know that sometimes, finale movies like that don't always, live up to the other ones, but I don't know, for some reason this has always been a special movie for me, so I had to go with this number one. I think it does do a good job of kind of wrapping up a lot of different things from the original trilogy, but always have fun watching this movie, so I think that's a good top five. Honorable mention, I think I'd say episode three. I think just the lightsaber battles really, really good in that one, but episode one, I think just the one I remember more from when I was a kid, so that's why I had to put it there. But yeah, I think episode three would be the only other honorable mention. Episode four probably as well. So yeah, hopefully those of you that listened are happy with that. So as always, on the podcast, you can listen to it on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. And you can follow along on Facebook and Twitter for the latest updates. We'll be back with you folks next week.